Hello, and a very warm welcome to Fireside Chats. My name is Magla Pillay. It is my privilege and honor to have in the studio with me today a yogi of over four decades in spiritual endeavor in her experience under her belt, Sister Denise, who has been practicing Raja Yoga meditation for that amount of time. The series today chooses to focus on the core of spirituality. We ask you to take a good look into your heart and your life and to ask yourself whether there is a balance between the person that you'd like to be and the person that you've become. We'd ask you to look at your relationship with God, whether you are happy with your relationship with God, whether you're happy with your own set of values and the person that makes you who you are. Today we look at questions in such a manner so that you will be able to reflect on your own philosophical as well as spiritual integrity. And we ask you the question as to whether there is a harmonious balance in your life between your own personality as well as your relationship with God. So bearing all of these questions in mind, I'd like to bid a very warm welcome to Sister Denise. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
The topic for today is beyond good and evil. This topic is very interesting because, like you, I also tend to categorize things and sometimes people into being good and evil, whereas Sister Denise has a fresh take on the subject. And so I'd like to ask her, Sister Denise, why beyond good and evil? The reason I'm asking this question is because if we see something bad happening in the world, like current affairs is designed to cause shock. And does cause shock globally, not just in the country in which it's happening, but globally. Then you get people who are good, people helping strangers on a daily basis that so astounds humanity because of its selflessness. We all fall into this category of appreciating good and hating evil. And yet you wish to take us beyond that? Tell us how?
You know, we evaluate people. We say this is a good person, this is a bad person, this is a good action. That's different. This is a bad action, you see. Good people make mistakes. In fact, we would say from a spiritual angle that every soul on earth is good, because the elemental qualities of all souls are purity, peace, power, love, bliss. All very, very good qualities. What I feel is that when souls, when people become empty of those qualities, they become weak. And when a person is weak, then they're unable to do powerful actions. So powerful actions are good actions. People who are spiritually weak tend to do bad actions, not because the person is bad, but because the person is weak. So I think that classifying people as good and bad is misleading. There are good actions which result in good results and bad actions which result in bad results. But I think our problem is, and this is also part of the teachings of the Brahma Kumaris, is that we look at everything in terms of good and evil, where it's much more subtle than that, it's not quite so straightforward, and we need to look at it differently.
Mr. Denise, do you believe that there are people on this earth who are evil, or do you not even look at it like that?
Well, I don't look at it like that. I mean, there are roles that people play. Now, if you are cast in a movie to be the villain, that's just a movie. But in the world, you know, there's even Shakespeare was saying, you know, the world is a stage and we're all characters in it. And if you're cast as a villain in the world, on the world stage, then you could say that's unfortunate. But still, the soul in its original condition is pure. And when a soul is weak and corrupted, then you see that soul can become an instrument for the force of evil. And that's a very unfortunate thing to do, which we all have to resist. But some people don't resist it.
Hmm. May I ask why it is important to you to go beyond good and evil? Because most people, me included, are quite happy to be in this is good, this is evil.
Take the phenomenon that we see a great deal at the moment due to many reasons. There is something called Islamophobia. You know, we don't have, I don't think we have, how do you call it, Christianophobia or Hinduphobia or Buddhaphobia.
Yes, I've never heard those.
There
words.
Is anti-Semitism, definitely. Mm. But this is all to do with prejudice. You know, a person from a particular group will, in the name of their religion, do something which is actually against their religion, and then people adopt an attitude of prejudice against anybody else who's connected with that, and that makes them do very bad actions, you see. And so I think it's very valuable to go beyond good and evil, because it takes us beyond the happy-go-lucky way of casting people in a prejudicial way as good and bad. You know, any kind of prejudice is going to label, you know, this person is good because they look good in my angle, not because they really are doing good actions, and vice versa. So when you take yourself beyond good and evil, you are saying, okay, everyone has a right to be who they are and what they are. And with conventional morality, or the part that I call toxic conventional morality, you take it upon yourself to punish, to cause harm to who you see as the enemy or as a bad person, you know. And this is part of the propaganda that happens in war situations. You cannot get people to kill other people unless you dehumanize those people, you see. Mm. And that is all part of the process.
Sister Denise, you know, what concerns me about what you're just saying is that there are occurrences in this world that are shocking in its evilness, like a child being violated. And so in every country across the globe, there is a system of justice to bring those perpetrators to book. Now, if what you are saying is true, and it's implied, should there be a system of justice? Because you see, the world is has structures in place to maybe not stop evil, but to let people know that if they harm an individual, they harm society, and by harming society, they get punished.
Well, no, definitely that has to be in place.
So somebody who commits an atrocity against a vulnerable member of society should, in your definition, still be punished?
No, the system of justice has to be there. Mm-hmm. And the system of justice involves punishment, definitely. It could involve rehabilitation much more than it does. It may involve some rehabilitation, but normally the justice system doesn't, and there has not been any addressing of the problem of victims becoming perpetrators, you see, because the justice system doesn't look at it like that. It could, but it's not practical. So one thing is the practicalities of life in the world as we live. The other thing is, okay, I'm an individual. Now, I need to really look at how I look at another human being. Am I going to be this, you know, punitive person who, you know, is looking for revenge, looking for blood? You know, is that going to make me a better person? Is it going to make the world a better place? Most probably not, you know. And this really refers to people who are not part of the justice system. You know, conventional morality is fundamentally punitive. Once you start to look a little bit more into the laws of spirituality, the laws of karma, and so on, yes, you will bring a person to book, but at the same time, you'll qualify that with any way their karma is going to produce some or another consequence, very negative consequence. But it doesn't mean I need to look at that person with hatred in my eyes, because how does that make me a better person, you know?
Hmm. So Denise, if an individual finds himself in the position where someone has committed an act of evil against him or her, and they're, you know, the cyclical nature of things, you'll be very inclined to perpetuate that misery to someone or others, because that's what you hold in your memory track and in your DNA. How do you stop the cycle of good and evil within yourself?
Well, I think a lot of work is getting done where the victims and perpetrators are meeting each other, talking it through, and kind of toning down all of the emotions that are involved with it. Because you see, it is possible for a person to say, okay, this was done to me, but I do not have to escalate it. I do not have to add to it. If I am powerful enough, I can absorb it.
Okay. How do you come to terms with the pain experienced as a result of evil inflicted on you when you were vulnerable as a child? There are millions of children across the globe who are treated atrociously. Okay. And that itself is a disaster waiting to happen. But there are many adults who have been victimized as children, who are now dysfunctional adults who haven't come to terms with the evil that was perpetuated onto them.
Well, you can say the evil that was perpetuated onto them, which is a value judgment, but you can say what exactly happened to them without qualifying it as good and evil, and look at it as injury from which the person physically, psychically, socially, spiritually can heal, because they can, you know. As soon as you start talking about it as evil, you block the healing process.
Okay. So they the person renames it?
Well, I think that's a very important way to begin.
May I ask, do you hold the opinion that someone can heal from anything?
I think it's possible. I wouldn't say that necessarily everybody will, but there are enough examples of people who took it upon themselves to work through their trauma to indicate that if you decide to, you can. Because if you don't, then you will pass it on to someone else. And I think that knowing that is a very good incentive to work through it so that you don't pass it on to someone else. Because if you can't handle this negative energy that happened to you, you see, you'll put it to somebody else. You don't have the power not to do that. But if you work through it, then you're neutralizing it so that it doesn't carry on. That's very important.
Yeah, I can see that. So, Sister Denise, the good and evil inside one's own being, never mind what's on the outside, inside of you. I appreciate what you're saying, that human beings are primarily good, irrespective of what they've become. But if you wake up one fine day and realize, you know, 70% of me is good, but 30% is ugh, okay? And you want to, you find within yourself personality traits that you know are not good at all.
No, I don't look at it that way. I look at it as the 100% good that a soul was once has reduced 70%, 30%, whatever it is, maybe 99%. That means that there is a vacuum, there is an emptiness, and that emptiness is the darkness.
Okay, so let's look at that practically, okay? The reason for someone's negativity is?
They're empty.
So it's not that they're bad, it's that there's a space inside the soul that needs to be filled with something.
Yes.
Okay, what
light.
Do you feel?
Light. You say darkness. Mm. Darkness exists when light is not there. So darkness is not a thing in itself, whereas light is a thing in itself.
Okay. Denise, what is the light that you're referring to?
Purity, peace, love, personal power, happiness, courage, you know, all the virtues, all the powers, these are the things. As soon as you start cultivating those inside, the darkness is displaced by that.
What would be one's motivation for doing that? Because it's one thing to recognize that there's a gap within your spirit. Another thing to realize, okay, there is a being out there called God who can fill it. What would be the motivation?
I think the motivation is, I am worth it.
That's beautiful.
Mm. You know, I can recover from anything, you see. Mm. And I think that message needs to be amplified.
I am worth it and I can recover from anything. That's a lovely mantra to have on one's bathroom mirror and on one's steering wheel.
You can go into a gathering of people who are there incarcerated or whatever it is. And I've done this, you know, and just continue to say, you're worth it, you're worth it, you're worth it. But what message do they normally get? You're the scum of the earth. That's the message they get.
Hmm.
They don't have to be given that message. They can be given the message, you're worth it, you're valuable, you're important, you can do it. However many times they relapse, you know, this message is much more effective than telling people, you're empty, you're the scum of the earth, you're evil, we hate you. That's going to lead to suicide or homicide or both. And since you're an eternal and immortal soul, you're going to reincarnate with that sanskar. What has been the use of it?
The understanding is there that there's a dark side within a person. The will is there to change. The self-respect is there to understand. I can come back from anything and irrespective of my past, and I am worth it. Okay? Then all of those are in place. Now, where do you go after that? Because to get to this point of going beyond good and evil and to re-empower, it's a multi-pronged effort. So what comes thereafter? What does one do?
I think
where do you go?
You have to do a rigorous personal moral inventory so that
A rigorous personal moral inventory. Okay, I hope you know how to spell that. Yes.
You need to write down, I did this, I feel this, I think this, I resent this, and look at it, and then move through each one. It's a big piece of work, you know. It's so expedient to just get rid of people, put them in prison, kill them, whatever it is. But because everyone is an immortal soul, they're going to come back anyway. And they're going to come back worse because they're weaker. And so sooner or later, you know, it's going to be worthwhile one by one. Whoever says, okay, I want to be free, I want to be me, you know, start doing that. It's rather similar to the addiction recovery programs, you know, because when a person is caught in an addiction, I mean, robbery can be classified as an addiction, domestic violence is an addiction, so many of these things, any activity, the WHO has defined this, any activity that you do, that you continue to do in spite of negative consequences, that is an addiction. And the process of addiction recovery for any particular kind of addiction, whether it's substance or whether it's behavior, go through that process. And meditation is a very key part of it, because you have so little light, so little power, you know, that the most important thing to do is to increase that light and that power. And that you can do by directly connecting with God. There is no other source.
Okay, someone has is very insecure, okay, and they have become aware of their own deep-seated insecurities. So this person has ticked off all of the blocks that I've mentioned earlier, and this person now presents him or herself to God and wants to take something from God. What do you say? How do you engage with God?
They need to turn their attention to God with total humility. Because what is in the way between a self and God is the ego. You see, that absolutely blocks the possibility of taking help from God or taking light from God. So sometimes you can only have that humility when you have been fully humiliated.
That sounds very painful.
Very painful. But you see, until a person reaches a certain point where they can drop their ego and they hit bottom, that's the only time they can start coming up again. But it seems to me that that is the way. I'm not saying it's easy. It isn't easy, but it's possible. And at any point in a person's life, at any level of depth that a person may have fallen to, you know, God is not going to turn away or reject or abandon or anything like that. Anyone who will, in humility and in sincerity, turn themselves to God, they will receive a great wave of love and support. And that's very powerful. It's very healing, you know. But there is no other entity that can do that for a human being. And the thing that people need to know is that God is much, much more accessible than they think.
Is it an act of mercy to go beyond good and evil?
Perhaps.
Why do you say that?
Because you're not condemning out of hand, because you're coming from a place of love. You know, after all, this is another human being. This is your human brother.
It is. A lot of people have been confined because of their past, because of the way they were raised, because of certain, the religion that they were born into, norms, values, etc. People tend to be boxed into this, who they are in reality, and then there's all of these boxes and definitions which later becomes almost like a prison. Yes. Around them. Okay, so although what you may be saying is valid and doable and lovely to listen to, how do you get yourself out of this prison of, for want of a better word, indoctrination?
Well, I think that's perhaps the usefulness of a program like we've got here, because then people can hear something that perhaps they hadn't heard before. To know that you're an actor and these are just circumstances, situations that you are in as a teaching, as a test. Life is a university. God is waiting for you to notice him, her.
Life is a university. That's actually quite beautiful. Life is a teacher. Okay, I haven't heard that one before. Life is a university. So the journey that you just described appears to be lifelong. One has to go into it for the long haul because it's not something, none of this will happen overnight, will it?
No, but I mean, you look at your life and you say, okay, my life is 80 years, 90 years, whatever it could be, and say, this is a long journey and the purpose of this journey is for happiness. Along the way, there's a lot of unhappiness, but it's full of lessons, it's full of opportunities, it's full of, comments from life, which says, be awake, be aware, understand who you are, understand what your value is, stand up for yourself, things like this,
If somebody stays within the cycle of good and this is good and this is evil, what's wrong with that picture?
I think what's wrong with it is it's too black and white. And you tend to be very judgmental. You tend to be somewhat merciless, very easily condemning people. And you are making out that you are very good and everybody else isn't, or most other people aren't. Or you will find yourself admiring some people who really don't deserve such admiration and condemning other people out of hand who are not quite so black as you are painting them. And so it becomes, quite a limited type of thinking.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if somebody stays in that mode of thinking, they're actually doing themselves an injustice.
Well, I think they are, and I think they're also doing other people an injustice. But, it's very much the way of conventional morality. But I, take exception to it because it tends to dehumanize, and that is not such a good value. Mm. So I really think that we need to rethink our morality and rethink our value system.
Sister Denise, your viewpoint is rather magnanimous. And I think to get to that state, you have yourself done a lot of spiritual work to get there. It's quite a quantum leap of to come out of that space. That being said, I do appreciate what you are saying, and thank you so much for this message. I hope you have benefited from this talk. I found it to be very thought-provoking. Mr. Denise, thank you very much, and thank you at home for joining us, and I hope that this talk is enriching for you. Thank you, and we hope to see you soon. Goodbye. Thank you.